Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Parshas Bamidbar and Sefer Bamidbar. Sometimes my class is based on a lot of sources, commentaries that I've seen, and I try to develop it into a theme. Sometimes I have what's called an imagination class, whereby I will look at the parsha and I will see what's on the surface and try to use imagination to apply it to present day circumstances. Because one way or the other, I believe, and I think we all believe, that the parsha is relevant to us today, and that we need to hear its message in order to keep on going in our present situation. Sometimes it's more apparent, the connection, and sometimes I think it takes a little creativity and imagination. So there's advantages and disadvantages. The advantage is that it's interesting to think that way. Disadvantages is I might be wrong. I'm not basing this on commentaries, and therefore I beg your indulgence. And if I could just add, I'd like to present a certain model, and if you could hear me out first, and then we'll maybe have some discussion afterwards. Why do I need imagination in Parshas Bamidbar? Because I look at the parsha and I see a lot of rules and regulations that seem to govern only a specific group of people at a specific time and a specific place. It is the generation of the Jews in the desert, Bamidbar, in the desert, and Moshe commands them to be counted. Moshe arranges them at a tribal arrangement. He says everyone has to take up a position somewhere surrounding the center of the camp, which contains the Mishkan, the tabernacle, and everyone has his post. The Levites are immediately surrounding the Mishkan. The Israelites are around them. And three tribes will take the east side, and three tribes will take the north, and three the west, and three the south. And he says which one goes where, and he has everyone counted, and by the age of 20 and up. And then he further has a special counting of the Levium, the Levite tribe, and he divides it into three families, into Kehos, and Gershon and Merari. All of this, I'm telling you, is just, a synopsis of what's in here. And then he says that each of the families of the Levites are to assume a different responsibility in terms of carrying and transporting the Mishkan as they go from place to place.
They were the one who were in charge of taking care of the Beis HaMikdash?
Mm-hmm.
Or
yeah.
The Ten Commandments of the time?
Well, it had more than just that. It was
they had
the Torah, they had the Ark, they had the menorah. They were commanded to make all of these things right after Mount Sinai, and they did. And they had all these vessels, and they had already the boards and the coverings, everything to make up the Mishkan. And the Levites were supposed to transport it, and they were supposed to guard it while it was standing. They had to have a 24-hour guard, and they were to sing during the offerings. And the Kohanim, of course, were going to administer the offerings. And it's basically what the Parsha is. It's the structure of the Jewish camp. And plus, everyone's called the army. Tzava. These are the people in the army. Kol Yotzei Tzava b'Yisrael. And that's why they were counted at age 20. The Levites were not in the army, and therefore they were not counted from age 20. They were designated for temple service. That's the Kohen and the Levi. And therefore they had their own census from age 1 month and up.
Does that mean that
age 20, the significance of that is because those were the ones for the army?
They were the ones that are old enough to be in the army. Yeah, that's a simple understanding. And that's the Parsha. So,
the Kohen and Levim, were they only from one tribe, or was they from?
One tribe. In fact, it was supposed to be, originally, God's plan was that the firstborn of every family would be a priest. Mm-hmm. But when the Jewish people committed the sin of the golden calf, with the exception of the Levi tribe, Hashem said that no longer are the other tribes worthy of serving in the temple. We will now transfer that position to only the Levim, because they did not participate in the Egel HaZahav, in the golden calf.
The Levim were already there at that time. Right?
Yes. Yeah.
I thought it was kind of interesting with the formation, the same formation for Jacob's coffin.
Right, as they carried the coffin for burial. That's right. So, how does this apply? Where is the relevance? Where's the message? Where's the message? So we got to get a little creative over here. Anybody have? This is one of those parshios that you kind of sit there and you scratch your head and say, well, maybe we should talk about Shavuos.
So you're saying, what do we learn from?
What do we learn from this?
There's a place for everyone.
Everybody depends on the other one.
Okay, so we have a few apparent messages right here. Number one, everyone is counted, which means that everybody is important. Every Jew of that age, the procedure of being counted was to give a half shekel. This was described in another place. Every time they were counted, they used the half shekel system, and they each one personally was greeted by Moshe and Aaron, shook their hands, and each person felt that he or she is an integral part of the nation.
Did they have a lottery every time too?
Lottery? Just to count them?
Because there were an extra 300, so 300 didn't have to pay the shekel.
You're thinking of the transfer of holiness from Levites to firstborn.
So that was a special.
Yeah, that was a one-time thing. Yeah. Let me try to put forth my idea, and then let me welcome conversation after that. Those are certain points of relevance that we see. The idea of being counted, the idea of being important, the idea of having your place. I must have talked about these ideas, and we all have, in the past on this parsha. What I was thinking of this time is to look a little bit more closely at the different members of the Jewish people and their different roles and their different qualities. We basically have Kohen, Levi, and Yisroel. These are the choices. You can be a Kohen, a Levi, or an Israelite. Of course, in those days, you were born into it. If you were a Kohen, you were a Kohen. You couldn't be a Levi. And if you were not born a Kohen, you couldn't be a Kohen, no matter how much you paid. And if you were in the tribe of Judah, you were in the tribe of Judah, period. And you had to live there, and you had to do what Judah did. Now, of course, nowadays, we cannot stick to that model because we are all basically mixed up. Nobody knows really what tribe. We're all interbred between the tribes, and we don't even have that information. We have each Kohen or Levi has somewhat of a family tradition, although in halachic terms, one may not claim Kohen rights when it comes to something monetary. Kohen, for example, could not go over to an Israelite and say, give me your tithe, because he could say, you don't have the proper documentation that you are Kohen. And he's right. You know, we don't have, it used to be that everybody had a document which traced the lineage, you know, back to Aaron or to Moshe.
But the Israelite chose so, the one to give it to, and the Kohen didn't ask even then.
Okay, but I'm just saying, to make the point, that we can't know which tribe we're from. But who said that we cannot look at the roles that the Kohanim and the Levim played and the various tribes played and say, maybe there's something that we can do to play that role, even if I'm not a Kohen? What did the Kohanim do in those days? And is there anything else that I could do to play the role of a Kohen? You know, Kohanim did not just bring sacrifices. We talked about that back in Parshas Emor. They only worked in the temple two weeks a year. What were they doing the rest of the time? The Kohanim were the holy workers, the workers of God. They did not engage in trade and in commerce and in professional life. They were solely devoted to service. Levites, they had a certain role in the Jewish people. They were the guardians of the temple. They were the guardians of the arena of the Kohen. So let's imagine that we are trying to role play, and let's see how we can translate those roles into our present day communities. So what I tried to do was make a matchup, a correspondence to various roles that we find in Jewish life, and see where it connects to the ancient model. So let's start with the Kohanim. Who would be the Kohanim today? Rabbis.
Not necessarily.
Well, that's one. A rabbi is devoted full time to holy matters, to teaching Torah. You know, all kinds of rabbis. There's rabbis, congregational rabbis. There's teachers. There's heads of yeshivas.
Mm-hmm. The Kohanim were the ones who were the teachers of the Jewish people then?
By and large.
I guess that would include the synagogue staff, period.
Well, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Hold on. Hold on.
Maybe the Rosh Yeshivas, the regular teachers, congregation. Rabbis, would be the Levites.
No. They're Kohanim. Because they are doing... What do we have in... We don't have karbanos. We don't have sacrifices. What do we have to have that close encounter with God?
Prayers.
We have prayers, we have Torah study, and we have mitzvahs. So basically, if you have an individual who is playing the role of a full-time Torah person, or prayer person, or mitzvah person, like a full-time, you know, a moel, or a gabai tzedakah. Let's say in the olden times they used to have people that all they did was they collected and distributed tzedakah to poor people. I think if you're a full-time Torah, Avoda, or Gemilus Chasadim, you know, person, you're probably playing in a loose sense the role of a Kohen. Mm-hmm. We could argue, but this, you know, again, this is imagination. Who are the Levim? Who are the Levim? Now let's just define. There were three families of Levim. There were the Kohas family. Moshe was a descendant from Amram, who was a descendant of Kohath. There were three. Levi, the original Levi, had three sons. Now, how do we distinguish between the three sons? The Mefarshim do say that they were distinguished by what they carried of the Mishkan. Kohath, they carried the holy vessels. They carried the ark. They carried the menorah. They carried the table of the showbreads. They carried the altar. Gershon carried the skins and the tapestries. And that was second, you know, to Kohath. And Merari, they carried the hardware. They carried the boards and the poles and the hooks and all that.
How do you apply that?
So let's see. Let's imagine.
So the Gershons are still those two Gershons. It's portable now.
So we're not talking about carrying a Mishkan. What is analogous to this?
The lay leadership of a synagogue.
Okay, let's break it up further. And we're not here to peg anybody, but let's think about all the different jobs that are required for the Jewish community. You have people that are directly involved with maintenance. They're all involved in maintenance. Levi, that's their job. Shomri Mishmeres HaKodesh. Their job is to guard the holiness of the temple. Mm-hmm. You have people that are directly involved with the maintenance of the Kohanim. You have people that administer, for example, you have a school. A school is filled with teachers, Torah teachers. These are Kohanim. And then you have the administrators, which make sure that the teachers have classes and have the infrastructure to teach and the periods marked out and the you know and the resources, the materials that they need and to help them, to guide them. You have administrators that are directly involved with the teachers. You have people that are there to serve the famous in Hasidic circles. You have the Rebbe, and then you have his shamish. You have his attendant. He never leaves the side of the Rebbe. He's there to help him with what he needs. He's there to be a go-between to the questioners. You have then you have some people that you have people that are responsible for making sure that the rabbis have their support. They're earning money, they're raising money that go directly earmarked for salary, let's say. They're on the salary committee, or they're on the search committee. You know, these are people that are carrying the vessels, carrying the material of the holy work. You have other people that are involved in upkeep of, let's say, the infrastructure. What about, you know, in order to have teachers, we need to have a building. You know, you need to have... You know what? I would put the people that are involved in the support of the rabbis would be Gershon. Gershon. They're not working with them firsthand. They're not the administrator or the assistant, but they are involved in the support. They may not see the rabbi, but they are involved in supporting. Then you have the people that are responsible or take responsibility for the upkeep of the building and the building campaign and all of that. You could say they're like Merari. They're carrying the hardware, right? And they'll make sure that we have money to pay the rent and money to pay the mortgage and for maintenance and upkeep, which is just as vital to the Mishkan. Now the Torah says there are certain things that lines have to be drawn. Levim, the Levites are not allowed to come in contact with the ark as long as it's in the the chamber of the Holy of Holies. Only a Kohen can do that. A Levi is not allowed to look at the ark when it's not when it hasn't been dismantled. So a Levi can't do what a Kohen does, and a Kohen can't do what a Levi does. They're not allowed to cross bounds, which would suggest to us, if our imagination is working properly, that there are certain things that rabbis shouldn't do. You know, rabbis shouldn't be making building decisions, perhaps, and vice versa. The people that are in charge of building shouldn't be telling the rabbis how to decide or what kind of religious policies to make or educational policies to make. If you were to take this model, we would have to say that the jobs are separated. So there we have the beginning. We have the Kohen, we have the Levi, and then we have the Yisraelim. Now, who are these Yisraelim?
Everybody else.
What is their job? What are they doing?
They're the followers.
They're not just the followers. They're the followers, but they're also the doers. Now, here's a line distinguish between Kohen and Levi and the rest of the people. The rest of the people are in the army. That means they're soldiers. What's the difference between the soldiers and the Levites and the Kohanim? The Levites and the Kohanim don't go out to fight. What it means to be a soldier is to go into the land of Israel and to encounter the seven nations. And we've been foretold by Moshe that these nations are antithetical to everything that we stand for. They don't believe in God. They don't follow rules of decency. They are idolatrous. They are immoral. You have to go out there and you have to meet these people, and you have to talk to them, and you have to determine: do they want to be with us? Are they willing to accept God's leadership and accept the 7 Noahide laws? Fine. If not, we were told by God to remove you. Okay, we're not asked to do that today, but we do have to go out there, and we do have to be soldiers of God. Every single person who goes out into the marketplace or goes out into the world is a soldier. He wears a badge, he wears a uniform, and he wears a badge that says, I'm a soldier in God's army, and it is my job to stand up for what is right in God's eyes. That makes every single person vital. We also have divisions among the Israelites. Like we mentioned, there's four directions. There were four banners that the Torah describes. Each banner bore the symbol of 3 of the tribes, according to some interpretations. What do these four groups of three, what do they have in common with one another? Much has been written about this by various commentators, but there's one particular one which stuck out to me. I had it in my notes from last year when we used to learn the green Sefer. This year we're learning the brown Sefer. But we pulled out the green, and there is a commentary by Kli Yakar who describes these four camps, these four directions of 3 tribes each, as each one having a particular characterization, quality. And he cites verses for each one. The first group of three, which marches on the east side, consists of Yehuda, Yisachar, and Zevulun, those 3 tribes. Kli Yakar shows by verses that these 3 tribes are characterized by wisdom. Wisdom. The second division, Reuven, Shimon, and Gad, are characterized by modesty and humility, which we would call, in our terminology, midos, character traits. These were people that excelled, that were outstanding in character traits, in midos, in the way that they carried themselves, in the way that they dealt with others. This was the trait of Reuven, the most outstanding of the traits. Ephraim, Menashe, and Binyamin formed a division which were characterized by strength. By strength and might and courage. And then Dan, which goes together with Asher and Naphtali, they were wealthy. Here we have 4 qualities. Wisdom, moral character, courage, and wealth. And the Kli Yakar says, the sages say that divine presence or prophecy rests only on the one who is wise, wealthy, mighty, and modest. And not everybody has all of them. But we do have specialists. We have people that specialize in wisdom, specialize in learning, and that's their, among other things, that's their primary focus, their primary contribution. They pursue wisdom. They take advantage of every opportunity to study, and they're doing this not just for themselves. This is not just for personal advancement. This is their contribution. This is their role in the army, and we have that today. And anybody could say, we don't know what tribe we're from, but a person can say, I feel that I'm particularly inspired or moved to develop wisdom and to contribute that to the Jewish people. And that's his role. There are people that, to them, the most important thing is their midos, is the kind of character traits that they have. Always to be kind, always to be polite and thoughtful and sensitive to others. and it's just a pleasure talking to them, and you love being around them because they're such wonderful people, and they, you know, they can serve as a role model, and they can teach other people to be that way too. They may be teachers, you know. There are some people that are not rabbis, but they are wonderful role models for children. They may be in the army of moral character. And there are other people that their quality is courage. They're the ones that in the face of adversity stand up and act. They're the ones that can know how to go to someone else who is very in need and need of some kind of help, and they can infuse them with hope and courage and faith. They can do the tasks that nobody else wants to get done. These are the people, these are the mighty people and the strong people which make up our nation, which are vital to us. And then there are the people with wealth. They can support all of the endeavors that the Levites don't have the money. The Kohanim don't have the money. But these people, this is the branch of our army that can provide. And not only that, but they can show the world how to use monetary possession for holy endeavors and not to be exploited. These are vital people. And so...
That was just in Levim, you said that.
No.
The ones who were in charge of the money.
They were in charge of raising the money.
Oh.
But not, they don't have the money. So that we need the dons and the ushers and the naftalis, and you know, you could be, there's no lines of demarcation anymore. You can be a little bit of both or a little bit of all four, but the point is, the Jewish people cannot be healthy and vibrant unless we have Kohanim doing their job, Levim. They're very, very vital, supportive roles. And the Yisraelim, each one being a soldier and providing that particular quality and strength that everyone else needs for everything to run. And putting it together with what you said, that everybody is counted and everybody is vital and no one can sit out because everyone has a contribution that the other ones need. And this is a powerful and important message for us. Whether we deal with planks and poles, whether we deal with sacrifices or not, whether we're sitting up 24 hours and watching a tabernacle, that may not be the particular expression of these roles, but these roles are vital just as much today as they ever were. And this is what we learn from Bamidbar. We must form a camp. We must take a position. We must play a vital role. We must be a soldier, or we must be a Kohen or a Levi, and we all need to step up and play our role. That's the relevance of Parshas Bamidbar to our present situation. Yes?
First of all, as far as that there was an encampment by everybody, is an overall lesson that there's supposed to be order, as you said, among the Jewish people, because the second verse in Bereishis, that the natural order of creation is chaos, null and void. So what this is teaching us is that that could go away in an instant if we don't deserve it, and God is always continuously keeping order as long as we camp around the Torah. So that's the overall lesson we're learning. To simplify all that stuff you said, we know that the Kohanim brought sacrifices, which is replaced by prayer today, which would be analogous to a pulpit rabbi, and let's say the prayer services. Moshe was a Levi who was the teacher of the nation, and the Levites didn't participate in the golden calf, and they were the only ones who circumcised their children when everybody else didn't. So they are the teachers, the ones in charge of the base medrash, let's say, the upkeep and all of that. And Israel, the rest of the people, are the congregation, so to speak. And all together we form this idea that we have to have order, otherwise we can revert to chaos. But surely Moshe, being a Levite and a teacher of the whole nation, we learned that Levites, yes, were teachers, and the Kohanim where prayer substituted for the sacrifices that they were in charge of, they would be more like the pulpit rabbis, administrative ones. So that's a simple way of looking at it.
Okay. There's some variation in your model with my model, but what I'm saying is just my imagination, and you have your imagination, but it's a variation on a similar theme, theme.
Yeah, I was just taking things from Torah in actuality, since Moshe was the teacher. I mean, he was a Levite, so
right.
I combined imagination with facts from the Torah.
Okay. Very good, thank you.
Moshe being a Levite and Aaron being a Kohen was...
Sounds a little backward.
Yeah.
You mean Moshe should have been the Kohen and Aaron should have been the Levi? I'm going to ask one of my sons if they can comment on that question.
He was the Kohen for 8 days. Moshe was the Kohen for 8 days. When the Mishkan was first created, he was in charge.
And then?
Okay, but why only 8 days? I mean, why didn't he get to be the Kohen forever?
Because he gave God a hard time when he wanted him to take the children of Israel out of Egypt.
Well, was it that, or they struck the rock?
No, he lost the right. He lost the right when God said, "I want you, Moses, to take the children of Israel out of Egypt." And Moses said, "No, I can't. No, I can't speak." And saying no, he demoted him. That's how Aaron got the job of Kohen. He says, "Well, if you're just going to keep backing off, I'm sorry you lost it. I'm giving the job of Kohen to your brother, and he'll be your spokesman, and you take the people out."
Well, the reason why Aaron was a spokesman was because they said Moshe stuttered a lot.
Yeah, yes.
Is that correct? Is that why he made Aaron the Kohen?
Could be.
Okay.
He wasn't at that meeting.
You missed that. You missed that session. You missed that. Yeah. Is that sure?
That's what I would say.
That is correct. I read that Moses was going to be the Kohen, but he lost it when he kept refusing God, so he gave it to Aaron.
Wait a minute, did Moshe actually ever refuse Hashem? I don't think he did.
Well, let me read to you a verse back in Shemos, and then a Rashi on that. Chapter 3 in Shemos is the incident with the burning bush. And there was, the sages tell us that there were 7 days where Moshe kept on, arguing. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say that. How would Moshe argue with Hashem? Several years ago, Rav Yaakov Weinberg Zatzal was in Atlanta. It was a Motzei Shabbos, and that was the first Malava Malka benefit for Neri Yisrael. Rabbi Leonard Oberstein was here, and he said, "Atlanta, we've stayed out of your community for 10 years now because we know that you had the Kollel and you needed to provide funds for them. But 10 years is a long time. Now we're ready for young Israel from Neri Yisrael to come in and visit." And he brought in the Rosh Hashiva, and it was. He asked this question: how could Moshe argue and say no to Hashem? And does anybody remember this evening? It was at the on Spring Street at the Federation. And he said Moshe would never argue with Hashem. He says apparently Hashem. Let me just make sure I'm saying it in the order in which he said it. Okay. Hashem never said to Moshe, "Go do this." If he had, Moshe wouldn't make a peep. He said to Moshe, "Do you think that you would be able to and willing to take on this responsibility?" And Moshe said, "No, I don't think I am. I don't think I'm qualified." And Hashem kept on saying, you know, he said, I don't speak well. And Hashem said, you know, who gives man speech? But the reason why Moshe kept on coming back is because Hashem had never put it point blank as a command. Which led to the follow-up question, which is, why didn't Hashem make it a command, and then Moshe wouldn't have argued? To which Rav Weinberg said, a very important rule in leadership, you cannot tell somebody to go be a leader. You cannot say, "This you must do this. You must go be a leader." Leadership requires dedication, and if you, above all things, and if you have it, you'll be a leader. If you don't have it, you won't be a leader. And therefore, he couldn't have said, "Do it." He could only say, "Do you think you could do it?" That changes everything. Now Moshe is not being, you know, being chutzpahdik. He's not. He's actually trying to be a judge of himself. If Hashem got angry at Moshe, it's because apparently he felt that Moshe. This I don't think Rav Weinberg said, but it would appear to me that if why did Hashem get angry? Because he thought that Moshe maybe was not being confident enough about his ability to do that. And you know, which. But anyways, that's a very important background point to the whole story. One of the things that Moshe said to Hashem, and this is one of the last things, was, "Vayomer bi Adoshem shalach na biyati shlach." He replied, "Please, my Lord, send through whomever you will send." Now, what does he mean by that? Whoever you will send. So Rashi says, Biad misha taragil lishloach. Send the one who you've been sending until now. Remember that Moshe had been in Midian since the time that he ran away from Pharaoh's sword. How many years?
40.
I think 15. Something like 15.
I think he was there for 65 years.
I thought he was there.
He was a young boy. He was a 13 in Midian. He didn't go back to Egypt until he was 80. He was in Midian for 65, 66 years.
He was already
on Social Security of the Midian system.
That wasn't he more in one place?
Yeah, that's
he was the king
rush.
For 40 years at that place.
At some
and then
place
he was
that.
With...
Okay, but he wasn't in Mitzrayim. He wasn't with the Jewish people.
Right.
In the meantime, if Hashem had something that had to be done, who do you think he went to? Aaron. So Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, why send me? I'm an outsider now. Send the one who you normally send. Send Aaron. All right? Now, to which Hashem says, the wrath of Hashem burned against Moshe, and he said, is there not Aaron, your brother, the Levite? I know that he will surely speak. Moreover, behold, he is going out to meet you. And when he sees you, he will rejoice in his heart. You shall speak to him and put the words in his mouth. I shall be with your mouth and with his mouth and teach you both what you are to do. He shall speak for you to the people, and it will be that he will be your mouth and you will be his leader. Here he says, the Talmud teaches that God's wrath always leaves a lasting effect. In this case, Moshe was punished permanently for his recalcitrance by the loss of the priesthood. Had he accepted God's call, he, not Aaron, would have been the Kohen Gadol. And the priesthood would have gone to his descendants. Now it was stripped from him and reserved for Aaron. That's Rashi on chapter 3 of Exodus.
So you said, right?
Sure.
The fact that we're told that we are to survive through Torah study and mitzvot, is that enough to encompass all that you said to show that support, windows, monetary, because when I think of just following the commandments and Torah study, that doesn't grab me that I have to do all of these things. I have to be part of Klal Yisrael, but specifically.
What are you saying? There's another option, which is just to...
not an option. It's like it's not explicit enough.
Uh-huh.
I'm not educated enough. If I just have the blanket philosophy of Torah study and doing the mitzvot,
I don't get the message that you have told me.
Of course you have, because you've pursued Torah study, and your Torah study has brought you to a class on the Parsha. And the class on the Parsha has informed you that you've got to take one of these roles.
But
that's what your Torah study has taught you.
I will accept that.
No, you can always, you can always, like in mathematics, you can always reduce, and you can reduce. You know, there's a Talmudic passage that says there are really 613 commandments, but so and so came along and said that you can distill them all into 9, and then somebody else came and said 6, right? You can distill them into 6. Another one said you can distill them into 3. Another one, then Habakkuk, the minor prophet Habakkuk, said you can distill it into 1. You know, the tzaddik be'emunaso yichya, the righteous person lives with faith in God. You know, you can always reduce. And of course, everything, you know, revolves around, as you said, Torah study and mitzvos. But when you get down to translating that into action, and you look around and you say, I'm not living here in a vacuum. There's a community around me. There's a Jewish people. There's a certain structure and a certain infrastructure that the Jewish people need. We must have continuity of education, and we must have communal places for Jews to gather and study and worship and to interact, and therefore there are institutions that have to be provided for. You realize that we're not, no man can live alone, and by whether we realize it or not, we're part of an army. And there are things and there are qualities which you in your life are naturally inclined to, that we've mentioned. And it's your great privilege to be able to identify with the roles of that our Torah provides in Bamidbar.
Did you know all that, Dave? About yourself?
You're looking at yourself in here. We all are.
He's from the tribe of Dan, anyway.
Tribe of Dan. And I'm from Menashe. I think we're on the same team, right? See, the title that we sent out on the email this week was Join the Team. This is Join the Team. We're all on the team. Thank you.
Hi.